Hey, welcome. This is the latest episode of Climate Conversations, and it's so great to have you on board. And I am your host, Robert McLean. Climate Conversations is assembled here in Shepparton in northern Victoria, Australia, on the lands of the Yorta Yorta people. Yes, the stolen lands of the Yorta Yorta people, and I pay my respects to elders, past, present, and emerging. From here, we go to a story from the conversation by a senior lecturer in psychology from the Australian Catholic University, Michael Notell. The story, what do we owe future generations, and what can we do to make their world a better place? It includes a 12-minute clip that gives us a look at where the world is heading with regard to population. You'll find the link to that story, including the short film clip, in the show notes.
It's pretty unlikely that birth rates will stay stable forever, but let's pretend to make our thought experiment simpler. How many people there will be in the future depends on when our species will die out. And here, we find a lot of uncertainties. We are able to destroy ourselves through our own inventions, but we are also able to find solutions to avert catastrophic risk. We can change the direction of planet-killer asteroids, but we've also invented nuclear weapons. We discovered antibiotics, but also carry diseases across the globe in a matter of days. Our industrial system gives us an incredible standard of living, but also changed the atmosphere in the process. It's very hard to say if human ingenuity will prolong or shorten our species' lifespan. If things go badly, our end could come suddenly. But if we manage to avoid that, we could conceivably stick around for a long time.
And please remember, you'll find a link to that story in the show notes. Vivian Langford from the Climate Action Show on Radio 3CR is committed to helping people better understand the implications and complications of the climate emergency. Her latest two shows look at the dirty truth about green optimism and Australia's green extractivism and sacrifice zones abroad. You'll find links to both those presentations in the show notes.
Tonight we'll go to Ecuador and Colombia, as well as to the Wadanungu ceremony in central Queensland. We are looking into the dirty truth about clean energy.
And now we hear from Vivian with a show about Australia's green extractivism and sacrifice zones abroad.
How perplexing this transition to renewable energy is. Really, listeners, I'm out of my depth with this one. The demand for critical minerals is causing a gold rush mentality that really worries me. Today we'll go to Chile with one of our guests. They are actually leading in renewable energy. They've got 13 gigawatts of wind capacity planned and hydro and geothermal resources. But like us, they also have copper and lithium. And it's the exploitation of that may, I think, have undermined the resolution of people to continue in Chile to continue with their new constitution. Certainly, when the people of Chile rejected that constitution, the headlines in the mining papers were, for example, Canada, business for Canadian mines based in Chile can go on as usual.
Remember, you'll find links for those Radio 3CR events in the show notes. And now we hear the introduction to NYC Climate Week, and you'll find a link to that presentation in the show notes.
Please welcome Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent and this morning's host.
Good morning. Good to see you all. Welcome, everybody, to Climate Week NYC, the inaugural event, the kickoff. It is so great to be with you. My name's Bill. I cover this beat over at CNN, and I find that when I'm sort of drinking from the fire hose of peer-reviewed dread, the best anecdote is to get in a room with other folks to talk about it, talk about solutions and hopes and fears, and that's what we're going to do here today. We want to thank all of our organizers of Climate Week, and who have been working very hard to put this amazing event together, despite things happening overseas, over in London this morning. And we're gonna have three very interesting panels today. We're gonna talk about the state of the climate, and get sort of some cold hard facts about what we're up against these days with one of the leading minds of the World Meteorological Organization. We're also trying to figure out what's stopping us from getting it done, both at the corporate and governmental levels, and having a heart of the discussion with how climate justice, equity, and a just transition can be enforced. Now, before we get going, a reminder to please share on all of the socials. We're at Climate Group, and you can do the hashtag ClimateWeekNYC, please, on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, your channel of choice. And a little bit later on, we're going to be talking with folks from McKinsey, and Bill Ritter, former governor of Colorado, is joining us here for the great panel on some leading energy experts. But let's get this thing going with the woman in charge, CEO of the Climate Group, here to encourage us to get it done, Helen Clarkson. Helen?
Good morning. On behalf of everyone at Climate Group, we're delighted to welcome you to the Climate Week NYC opening ceremony. Today, of course, will be a day that goes into history books for other reasons. And I know it's not just those of us from the UK and the Commonwealth who will feel that a monumental figure has been laid to rest today. But as the world stops for reflection, we are only more inspired to look to the future. Many of you will, of course, be aware that King Charles III has long been a fierce advocate for tackling climate change. Indeed, he opened this event in 2020. We hope his passion on the issues we're here to talk about today continue to have a positive influence for years to come. The theme of Climate Week NYC this year, like last, is getting it done. And that's not just because we were too lazy to think of anything else or we wanted to recycle the posters. When we talked about the conversations we need to have this year, we still think the critical issue is moving from commitments to action. And we think Climate Week NYC is the ideal place to have those conversations and to keep asking ourselves, how do we do more? How do we get it done? In my role, I often get asked about progress. So people hear about conferences or policy announcements or commitments, and I get asked about each, is it good enough? And the answer is, it's often good, but rarely enough. So essentially, we're bringing back the theme because while in 2021, progress was made, it was not enough. There's a lot more that needs doing before we can claim to have got it done. And there are three words I keep coming back to this year: accountability, justice, urgency. Who's being held to account and by whom? In whose name is action being taken and is that fair? And are we making real, tangible, meaningful change at the right pace? The illegal invasion of Ukraine by Russia has reopened the conversation around fossil fuels, but we cannot see the West backslide on this issue. There are those with good intentions who are genuinely concerned about citizens, businesses, and governments, how they're going to keep the lights and the heating on this winter. And we must respect their sincerity and support their efforts. But we need to be honest and recognize there are many who want to use this situation to reopen debates which they have already lost. They lost on economic, scientific, and moral grounds. They lost the debate with policymakers, but most importantly, they lost it with the public. It is clear there can be no new fossil fuels, and we cannot even use all the fossil fuels we've already found. But despite knowing this, there's still a lot of talk in the political sphere about gas. We've seen suggestions of it being used as a negotiating tool ahead of COP27. European commentators talk about new gas in terms of energy security, and oil and gas companies call for the right for increased exploration. And obviously, it's important to see this issue through the lens of equity. But climate justice does not mean facilitating the further use of fossil fuels. It means understanding that the issues facing the global south are different to those facing the global north, and then supporting, financing, and implementing distinct approaches. The science is clear, and many of us experienced extreme heat across the world this summer, which has brought home to us once again as campaigners, business leaders, government officials, but also as individuals that we are experiencing climate change. But nothing has been quite so shocking as the flooding in Pakistan, which has caused devastation throughout the country. Our deepest condolences must be with that community, but so must the delivery of financial support that has been offered at countless conferences. We can be shocked at the pictures of devastation, but we can no longer pretend to be surprised. We know the things we need to do with urgency. We must say no to fossil fuels and yes to energy efficiency at scale. Before this winter kicks in and millions suffer huge bills or go cold, there is nothing more urgent. We must say no to the rehashing of old arguments and yes to delivering on promises already made. The Global North has made financial commitments to the South, and these are not being delivered. And every day this doesn't happen, the credibility of our leaders diminishes. We must say no to greenwashing and yes to meaningful progress. We're at the stage where commitments are no longer enough. We need to see action. And when there's no action or there are bad faith actors using commitment campaigns to avoid real change, we have a responsibility to act ourselves. From Climate Group's position, passive membership of our campaigns is not an option. A commitment is the first step you must take, not the last. The impact of climate change is becoming more apparent to those around us. According to a study last year, 56% of young people said climate change made them feel powerless, and about the same number agreed with the statement, humanity is doomed. Now, I don't want to complain about the reporting of the climate crisis when for so long it wasn't being reported at all, but threats of doom and destruction do not motivate people. What does motivate people is hearing about work that's being done to tackle the crisis at all levels, whether it's by leaders like the people here today on stage or in the audience, or the people running hundreds of events happening across the city this week. All of us who are working on this are motivated because we know that every 0.1 degree matters. That if we miss keeping the temperature under 1.5 degrees, we won't give up, we'll try for 1.6. And we must find a way to convey to people there is a point in keeping going, in keeping fighting, and in doing more. And so with that, I'd like to use the opportunity to cover some fantastic news from Climate Group. This year, we've appointed a new executive director for North America, Angela Branco, and we also have a new president and chair of our US board, Governor Bill Ritter. Both of them are here today and this week, and I'd encourage all of you, but particularly those of you based here in the US, to reach out. We're delighted to have such strong leadership in North America, and we're excited to work with all of you. So to close, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors who allow us to put this week on for you every year. As we go through this week, we're going to keep coming back to these themes: accountability, justice, urgency. What can I and what can you do to deliver on these? That is what getting it done is all about. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. I'm inspired. And please don't forget to check out the show notes, as you'll find some links in there that'll take you to the NYC Climate Week and several other links as well. That wraps up this episode of Climate Conversations. Thanks so much for your company. And until we talk again, please take care, stay safe, and please be kind. For everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. And please, if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it with your friends.